Did you know that according to the World Health Organization, 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men have experienced physical or sexual violence in their lifetime, often by an intimate partner? We are spending some time with our friends at Safe Homes to talk about their work and the ways the community can get involved on this episode of Range of Influence. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the ROI podcast, or Range of Influence, brought to you by Premier Networks. I'm Russell Hodney, President and CEO of the Columbia County Chamber of Commerce. And as always, I'm joined with my friend and co-host, Reagan Williams, Senior Vice President at Maybaum Real Estate and, of course, past chair of the chamber.
Russ, so great to be back in the studio. We do have a couple of great guests with us today from Safe Homes. We have Jennifer Frantum, the Development Director at Safe Homes, and Daniel Farr, the current board chair, and they're going to talk about all the work they're doing in the community. You know, you mentioned the statistic in the opening, but there are some other statistics I think are really important that impact us and our business community. And one that stands out in particular is that the cost of domestic violence exceeds over $8 million annually.
Yeah, that's a staggering statistic, but a much needed statistic in order to really understand the gravity of this topic. And with that said, this episode does address a sensitive topic. And while listening to this episode, if you feel like you might be a victim of domestic violence, please call 706-736-2499 to reach their 24-hour crisis hotline. Now, before we jump into our conversation, let's hear from our presenting sponsor, Premier Networks.
Premier Networks is the premier information technology and cybersecurity firm in the CSRA. You have enough to worry about for your business. Leave it to the Augusta IT guys to ensure your IT is done right. No ironclad contracts, no fine print, just fast, reliable technology from an experienced customer-centric team, locally owned. Call for a free cyber assessment, because in 2021, IT has to be right. Premier Networks, the official IT partner of the Augusta Green Jackets.
Well, welcome, everyone. We are here with Jennifer Frantum, the Development Director at Safe Homes, and also Daniel Farr, who is the Chair of the Safe Homes Board of Directors. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Excited to be here. Thank you.
So why don't we start with the obvious, Safe Homes. What is Safe Homes? I know some people are maybe familiar with you and maybe familiar with some of your programs, but your programs are the fundraiser parts of it. What do you guys do at Safe Home?
Sure. Well, Safe Homes is a domestic violence intervention center. Our mission is to transform victims of domestic violence into survivors. And so we have many programs and services designed to really take a comprehensive approach to supporting survivors along their journey to healing.
And that covers the CSRA?
Yes. What's your geographic? So we actually serve 10 counties. We're one of 46 state certified agencies within the state of Georgia. And so we have 10 counties that we serve. If someone calls from outside of those counties, we will typically try to put them in a facility closer to their home, just because they have the ability to get more resources and kind of long-term support that way. But sometimes that's not feasible. Sometimes they still do need to come to our location, and so we do that as well. But we are all independent of one another, but we do collaborate and kind of work together, you know, to support our clients.
In preparing for this interview and podcast today, I was doing some reading on your website, and I was really shocked at some of the statistics that you guys put out there as to how prevalent domestic violence is in our community. And I think that's something that probably isn't talked enough about, right? Just how much it happens. And a couple of things I just will read. So a stat from your website, 1 in 4 American women will experience domestic violence at least once in their lifetime. Every 9 seconds in the United States, a woman is assaulted or beaten. On a typical day, domestic violence hotlines nationwide receive 20,800 calls. I mean, that's significant in my mind. You know, you guys are obviously providing a great service. You know, maybe tell me about, you know, how did Safe Homes get started, and why does your organization, you know, want to serve these women and men, you know, so much, and what can we do as a community to help you guys?
Well, I'm glad you said women and men, because we do know that domestic violence has no face. It really can happen in any relationship because it's about power and control and an imbalance of power and control in a relationship. And so we actually got started in the late 70s with just a small coalition of women who noticed the need within their churches and their communities, their social circles. And so they would actually bring victims to their home and shelter them for a night or two, and then that would kind of be the end of it. And eventually they were able to establish some other partnerships. So with the YWCA and with the Junior League of Augusta, and they developed a task force and realized the need was even much larger than they originally thought. And so through some funding with the United Way and the community, they were able to establish our shelter. Our shelter was 16 beds, and really that was kind of all we did a long time ago. And as we've learned over time, there's really a lot of other services, because when you've gone through domestic violence, that's a big onion to peel. And so there's a lot of other services and needs that these women and men have. And so we were in that building for many, many years, and eventually opened an outreach office relatively close to the building, and that way we could help with some of the legal needs that clients had. And eventually we began doing counseling and support groups and things of that nature as well. And then in 2013, we began a capital campaign to open the facility we're in now. We moved in 2016, so we've been there, I guess, about 7 years now, and we have over 2,000 clients come through our doors each year. Many come through for shelter, but many more come through for outreach. And so what that really means is legal advocacy, counseling, support groups, financial assistance, residential aftercare. There are so many barriers for clients for victim survivors when they are leaving an abusive relationship. And so our goal is to help them really sustain for the long term. And so we can shelter them for a night, we can help them with a protective order. Those things are great, and that's important for that crisis piece in the beginning. But really the counseling and the support group and helping walk with them over the course of, you know, the next year is what's vital to their survivorship.
For those of you that are listening, yes, Daniel Farr is in the room.
I'm practicing restraint.
Yes, yes. Why don't we find out from you? So you got involved in Safe Homes. You got on the board.
Mm-hmm.
What was kind of your calling to it? How did you get involved? How did you find out about Safe Homes, and why did it appeal to you so much?
So the short answer is I was asked, and I said yes.
Voluntold.
Yes.
Now, Alex Brown was a neighbor of mine, and he was... I think at that point he might have been the vice chair of the board, and he asked me if I'd be interested in serving. And I had just rolled off as the chair for Leadership Columbia County and wanted to continue to stay plugged in and serve. But it wasn't as simple as like, our community has a ton of amazing causes, sadly a ton of needs, but thankfully there are many entities that help try to fill those needs and fill the gaps. So there's no shortage of nonprofits. Was pulled towards Safe Homes because, you know, everybody has different backgrounds, but kind of to the same point that when Reagan, you know, you looked at the website and looked at some of the stats and stuff, like I didn't necessarily look at the website, but I did some soul searching and recognized that, you know, what does it look like? What doesn't it look like? And felt as though kind of growing up and seeing some things that I probably shouldn't have seen, like that is just a glimpse of what some of these kids go through and what these spouses, you know, and the abused go through. And I first knew about Safe Homes through going through Leadership Columbia County. I was in the class of 2015, which happens to be the best class ever. And, you know, we had a round table with a lot of the local nonprofits. And I specifically remember learning about Safe Homes and not recognizing how prolific it is. And definitely felt pulled in that direction. So was happy to be asked to serve, you know, so I was asked, but I was happy to be asked and happy to jump in. And despite my best efforts to embarrass myself and not be the chair, you know, no, but in all seriousness, I was voted in as the chair, and I'm happy to serve. And you know, and I don't want to say it's weird, because that's not the right word, but it can get uncomfortable at times, not being the chair, but just knowing that we're here to talk about something that no one wants to talk about. Right? Yeah. This is an ugly truth. And, you know, I'm so appreciative of Amy and Jennifer and everybody that works on staff, because they deal with these thousands of phone calls. For every phone call, there's probably another 5-10 touch points. So tens of thousands of touch points a year where we're going through, you know, what arguably are very uncomfortable situations. And, you know, it all stemmed from my involvement ultimately all stemmed from, you know, going through leadership at Columbia County, and because I wanted to learn more about, you know, not necessarily just the people around me, but also everything within this, you know, this area. And, we've been here for 15 years, and I can say that, and this isn't a commercial for Leadership Columbia County, but that program was a shot in the arm that has just kind of woven a tapestry that I never would have appreciated or imagined to put together. So, you know, and here we are. So how's that for a long, short answer?
That's what we expected when we invited you on, yeah, Daniels, to get the long, short, rambling, but very good and sincere answer. No, we appreciate that. Jennifer, there's, you know, so many touch points that, as Daniel said, that you guys have with domestic violence victims, survivors. We talked about women. We talked about men a little bit. But children are impacted in a way that we probably can't even comprehend. And so many children see that in their home. What do you guys do for the kids that find themselves in a situation when they didn't do anything, but they're in a dangerous situation, or they're watching mom or dad get beat in the home and they don't know how to deal with that? What do you guys do for children?
Yeah, that is the heartbreaking. I mean, that is extremely heartbreaking. And I think we are never, those of us who've been working with safe homes or volunteering with safe homes or involved with safe homes in different ways, when we see that school bus come and pick the kids up and take them to school, it's just heart-wrenching every single time. But at the same time, it's good, because that means they're in a safe place and there's hope, and they're working towards, their non-abusive parent is working towards the next steps on the journey. So, you know, for kids, when they are with us, we recognize how critical that time is, because they're going to imitate what they see. And so it may come out in the form of bullying when they're young. It may be dating violence when they are teenagers. And it could translate into abusive relationships when they become
older. Do you see that trend whenever a child is raised in an abusive home, that they, because that's what's modeled to them, that they become an abuser or take abuse because that's the way they think is normal?
Right, or become victimized. We have had so many survivors who've shared their stories with us years later, and they say, you know, I grew up in this. That was never going to happen to me, but then it did. And I think, you know, everybody's different. You kind of have two extremes where some people continue in that cycle and then others don't, but it definitely is a cycle. We see it time and time again where it is very generational. And so that's why when we do have the children in our facility, or they're coming to groups with their parent, it's so important that we try to do some work with the kids too. So one way that we do that is while they're in shelter, if they're coming to shelter, obviously we do the obvious things that, you know, make sure that they're enrolled in school and that their basic needs are met, if they have any kind of medical needs, things like that. Because a lot of times if they've come to shelter, they probably left without anything, you know, with them. So we meet those basic needs. But then we also do groups for the kids. And so one of our counseling groups is called Magic in Me. And our counselors, we have two LPC counselors on our staff, and we work with dozens of interns every semester, master's level, who provide these groups. And they're curriculum based. They have kind of a start date, an end date. And while the kids are meeting, the parent is also in a group as well. We do parenting classes every week, and those are important because usually when there is abuse in the home, that dynamic between the non-abusive parent and the child is very strained. And even just things as far as discipline, you know, what does discipline look like? What is loving discipline? What is healthy ways to do that? And, you know, all of those things are so important. So we definitely have to focus on, you know, the kids and the teens.
How involved are you with the school districts and things like that, because obviously, you know, teachers are a vital part in that identifying victims of abuse, whether it be in, you know, spouse or with the kids. So how do you guys interact with the school districts?
That's a great question. So we, like I said, we serve 10 counties. And so we are constantly trying to have our information within all of the counties. And one of the ways that is in the schools. So just this week, we've sent out over 300 mailers to guidance counselors and to all of the schools, even daycares, anywhere that has, you know, children. They have our flyers with our tear off so they can be placed in a restroom. They can kind of be placed anywhere. Of course, the guidance counselors and things like that need to have them. But we'll also go and do presentations for the schools. And typically that's been, you know, older kids, but we love to be able to do that because it starts so early. So we have a task force in Richmond County and in Columbia County. They do sometimes collaborate and meet together, which is really nice. And then, of course, on those, we include people from the school board, people from other nonprofits who work, like communities and schools, things like that, so that everyone is kind of has the same information. And also, we're working with the victim in the best way possible, kind of that, you know, coordinated community response.
Earlier, you talked about volunteers. Obviously, most nonprofits run on the back of volunteers. Daniel being one, volunteering your time and serving. Talk a little bit about what you guys need from the perspective of volunteers. I know, you know, whether that be even just donations, what types of things are you guys after? What do you need?
We can always use volunteer support. So some people want to volunteer and just strictly do direct service, and that is wonderful. And there is some additional kind of training that needs to take place, and CPR certification, and just some additional procedures that have to take place for that. So direct service might mean that you come and you work in our facility helping with filing, because you would see confidential information that way. Could be helping in the shelter, cooking, cleaning. We always need people to grocery shop. That's a big undertaking because we have at least 24 people that we are feeding at any given time. And so that's a big undertaking. And that can kind of be a one-time sort of thing. We've had a lot of students from AU that like to do that as to get kind of their hours. Augusta Christian is coming next week. They're doing, throughout the year, the seniors are doing several days within the community where they go out and volunteer. And so one of them is to come to Safe Homes. And so they'll be working on putting packets together that go out for mailing to schools, to doctor's offices, to salons, and any kind of place that, you know, women might frequent. They'll be working on that. They'll also be working in our storage unit. So every month we collect donations on the first Friday of the month at Warren Baptist Church from 12 to 2. So today is a donation day. And from there, they go into our storage unit and then they get sorted. And then clients upon their exit, or if they're outreach clients and they just come in and they have a need, they complete a form and then we're able to provide them with clothing, toiletries, sometimes even kitchenware, and just other kind of basic things for their home, cleaning supplies, all of those things to sort of get them started.
That's so much. I mean, that's so many things to do and so many people to organize and so many things to pay for, right?
Right.
It's a lot to pay for. So I think a fun exercise could be, I know, Jennifer, you're the director of development. So, I mean, you're heavily involved in the fundraising. You guys are state and federally funded a little bit, right?
But we are.
You rely on so many community donations and stuff like that. So that's your job. But what I want to do is I want to have Daniel, in your presence, tell us all about how he and the board are supporting and helping the effort to fundraise. And we can talk a little bit about Fake It to Make It as we get into that. But it's got to be an important part of what you guys do to make sure that you have the resources to provide all these people with the services they need. So, Daniel.
Yes.
what are you doing as chair this year? And what is your, what's the board doing to make sure that Safe Home is supported in the best possible way?
Never enough. No, that's a good question. So I'll first off say that, you know, as the chair, you know, I'm the, speaking on behalf of the entire board, we have a big board, very engaged board, an awesome board, and I'm thankful for each and every one of them. I'll divert and then come back real quick, because the makeup of our board is, by our bylaws and our charter, are somewhat probably different than a lot of organizations, in that we are required and thankful to have, it's not a requirement that we begrudge at all, but we have law enforcement representatives on our board because they're in the community. We have legal counsel on our board. We have a survivor. We're required to have a survivor, you know, a former client, or, you know, aftercare on our board. So we have a big board, but we also have a very engaged big board with many diverse backgrounds. So I'm thankful for all that they do. And one of the things that is overwhelming when you kind of come in and you look and you ask Jennifer, like, what do you need? Tell me what you need. We'll go get it. We'll figure out a way to go get it, is that we are stewards over the resources of a very awesome entity. It's a very healthy entity, and we're thankful for that. But one of the most overwhelming statistics, and I'm not going to even quote a percentage because I'll get it wrong, but there are so many things that we are required to have by law, whether it be federal because of the funding we receive, partial funding, or state, again, because of the federal or state funding that we, that partially funds us. I would say that what funding we get pays for about half of what we're required to have. So our overhead, I'll just throw out a round number, we have to spend $600,000 a year to keep the lights on, and we get funding from grants from federal and state for about $300,000. And if they didn't require those things, then that's a $300,000 delta that we wouldn't have to cover. So there's a lot of, and again, we're not begrudging that, but it's just the reality when you kind of sit in that seat and you ask Jennifer that question, the answer is, well, we're starting in a hole, you know, because a lot of things that we're required to pay for aren't things that we necessarily would do on our own, but someone else is telling us that, and we're going to play, and we're, you know, and that's what we're going to do. So then, you know, you have a host of about 50 different agencies with acronyms, and we do everything we can to keep them happy, you know, and stay in compliance, you know. So you can imagine, Reagan, the Roberts rules of meetings are well within my background.
I'm sure that was a challenge.
And someone on
you
board,
starting out,
someone on the board may have given me a cheat sheet named Hannah Clifford.
Hannah Clifford, absolutely.
Thank you, Hannah. Yep. So, you know, it's more than just money, but that's a big topic of it. That's a big piece of it. And, you know, I don't know. So Augusta has so many nonprofits, and that's not a bad thing, right? Because there's a lot of needs, and I'm thankful that there are people to raise those needs. So everyone has their fundraising requirements, and we work together with so many of these nonprofits that we, you know, you would think like we're competing for the same dollar. And I guess at the end of the day, we are, man, it doesn't feel like that. And there's some overlap on some of our missions. Like one that comes to mind is child enrichment, you know, where we hate the fact that there are children involved in what we're dealing with. And I can only imagine that some of the things that child enrichment go with or have to deal with and encounter, but we work together, you know, regardless of fundraising, regardless of our entities, just to serve. And if you're helping, it all works itself out. It always has. And we're blessed. Thank you, Lord. We're blessed to have, you know, a healthy organization, but that doesn't change the fact that there's a lot of unknowns. And whatever she needs is, we're going to figure out a way to go get it, whether it's coming up with new ideas for fundraising, whether it's to figure out ways. One of the things that comes up a lot is in-kind sponsorships or in-kind donations. Like as far as volunteering, if you're a professional service and you want to donate your time as a professional service, I'll just throw one out of like a hairdresser or something. Like if you want to come and volunteer to serve food in the shelter, that's great. But if you want to come serve to help someone get ready for an interview, if you want to come share a life skill with somebody and sit there, we would love to have you. right? And so that's where we kind of think outside the box and look at it beyond just what the money is, and want to tap further into the resources that are in our area. And then within that pool of volunteers, you know, when you apply online, because you can apply online to be a volunteer and you submit your application, be patient with us, because you can imagine that we have to go through some red tape to make sure that you are who you say you are, that you have a clear background, that you, you know, are able to serve and are going to be around, you know, you're sensitive to, there's some training like Jennifer had alluded to, but there are so many things that come with after you've applied. Everyone's applied for a job at some point and not heard anything for days and weeks, hopefully not weeks, but days. And you're like, and you're just kind of on pins and needles. I would hate for anybody to walk away that's applied to be a volunteer and hasn't heard from us and thinks that we don't care. I'm making this up. I don't know that anybody feels that way or has heard that. But if you do know anybody that has, please dispel that immediately, because there's just some background work that we have to do, our due diligence, for everyone that you're going to be around, because it's already a sensitive subject. So, you know, we would love to have you. You know, just apply. Just go to the website and apply. You can go to the website and donate. There's a lot of things that we're focused on specifically, and I'll let Jennifer talk about some of the bigger items. But one of the things that's probably our biggest push, that, you know, there's so many subscriptions. I see my Netflix bill went up, my Spotify bill went up, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask everybody to go to the website. You guys feel free to do it right now on your cell phones while I'm talking. But go to the website and just click to donate now. It's just $10 a month. You have no idea what it will do for this community, for this entity. And I promise you, if there's an opportunity for us, you know, if we have an abundance of resources and we, you know, this $10 a month thing just lights a fire, like if it gets to the point we've got so much money and we can't spend it, we'll help these other agencies, like our sister agencies in other areas that are dealing with the same domestic violence thing. Like, we're happy to take our skills and our strengths and help other entities, you know, because it's just what we want to do. So.
And one thing I mentioned earlier, that we're one of 46 state certified agencies. Many agencies, including ours, are coming up on funding cuts, but there's some that receive no funding at all. So what that means is those people that they were serving are going to have to go somewhere. And so we don't know exactly what that looks like yet, but we don't know if we're going to have a larger county, you know, footprint than the 10 we currently serve. But that is something that we're having discussions about, because we know it's coming. So basically we're getting funding cuts, but getting more clients.
Yeah, they're not going away.
So we're having to, you know, really kind of think creatively about how we're going to fill those gaps.
Speaking of creatively, it's a good good segue into, you know, what I guess it's y'all's premier event for the year. Am I right? Fake it to make it being kind of the premier event. And we were talking earlier before we kind of got on the air, is that, for those of us that have kind of served in the community for a long time, I mean, Safe Homes has always been kind of a known quantity. I mean, we've known Safe Homes, but for the general public, I mean, Safe Homes was kind of a little bit more unknown, until Fake It to Make It, you know, came. And Jennifer, was that your idea? Is that something that you did when you came here as development director for Safe Homes? Is that something that you instituted or put together?
She'll be humble. I'll say yes.
Yeah. No, I thought so.
It's kind of my baby, my third baby. I have two real babies. It's kind of my third, but it was a group effort. We have two individuals who've been part of the event on my committee since the very beginning. We have another person who's very instrumental, who served many years at the very beginning. And it was really just, you know, it didn't start out as a lip sync battle in our minds. It started out as something totally different, and then it just sort of evolved. And so that first year, we were really, we always say, kind of flying by the seat of our pants. We had our first gathering with the teams who were going to be performing in November, mid-November, right before Thanksgiving, and the show was in January. So we were, you know, now it's kind of a year-round planning. It is our signature event, and it's grown and changed a lot too.
I remember that first event. I've been to not all of them, I don't think, but almost every single one, and it's grown and it's gotten so much bigger. And it is certainly an exciting and fun night. And I think it's needed, right? Because the domestic violence issue is not something that's typically talked about, and it's a heavy subject, right? So to bring something to the community that says, hey, we can have a lot of fun, and there could be something exciting that we can do that can help fund an organization that takes something like domestic violence and helps in such a way is exciting. I think the community response to Fake It to Make It's been huge, right? I mean, it's just, you guys sell out, right? I mean, it's just been, it's been huge. And every year, the contestants in it, I mean, it's so great to get so many great people from the community to participate. So tell me about, you know, how has it been getting people to participate in that and to fundraise? And it seems like it's, from my perspective, it's an easy thing to ask to be a part of it because so many people want to be a part of that.
They do. They do. And especially right after. But, you know, when the rubber meets the road, it is a big commitment. And we try to be very upfront with that, you know, about that with the contestants, because it is a big commitment. We're asking them to raise money and come up with two, you know, not one, but two performances to do in front of a couple thousand people. So the first 2 years, we were actually at the Imperial Theater, and we sold out both years. So we moved to the Miller, and we were there for 3 years. Again, kept selling out. We were so excited when the Performing Arts Center opened up here in Columbia County, because it's got, you know, 2,000 seats. And so it really allowed us to continue to grow and reach potential. And so, you know, it is a lot of fun, but it is a lot of effort on the parts of our contestants. And so we used to, when we first went into this, we thought, okay, let's get, you know, six people. Well, that has turned into six teams, six or seven teams. So each team can have five people total. So their self, you know, as the leader, and then they can have four more. And we really encourage the entire team to take a pretty active role in the fundraising and in the ideas of what they're going to do, because it just makes it so much better. It makes it so much more fun. There's more buy-in. And, you know, we do have a lot of people who want to do it, and it's great for them as well, because they're making connections with other people in the community. So, you know, it's really a win-win all around. And then you mentioned, you know, how domestic violence is something people don't want to talk about. And I think that's one of the most unique and special things about the event, is that we have a captive audience. So people come because they know somebody in the show, or they come because they've been before and it was fun and it's a night out. But once they're there, it is a lot of laughs and it is a lot of fun and it is a production and a show. But we always have a mission moment, and we always try to tie something back to our cause. And we always try to have that hotline number on the screen, because you just never know who's in our audience that is going through it right now or has a family member going through it right now. And so it's been kind of twofold. It's raised a lot of money, but it's also raised a lot of awareness.
Well, the 2,000 people in the room, right, based on your own stat that you provided on the website, you know, 1 in 4 women. So you got, let's just say 1,000 women are in the room of 2,000 people, right? So 250 of those women in their lifetime.
Right.
Statistically, will go through this. I mean, so yeah, people are in the room and they're experiencing that at that time, or have or will. It's important to talk about it. And I think this is, you know, such an important topic. And I'm glad that you guys are doing that event to just kind of shine light on that and then allow all of us in the community to be a part of your mission, even though not everyone's there volunteering and, you know, fixing people's hair and taking kids and helping with things. But, you know, they're able to at least participate in some way.
Right.
Which team has done the best at fundraising, and how much have you guys generated?
Okay, so the highest that a team has ever raised was 93,000, I believe.
Wow. Okay.
We've had many teams.
Who was that? Can you remember who that was?
That was Kate Sanders.
Right.
And that was, I guess, the year before last.
Yeah,
years ago. We've had several teams that have gotten in like the $50,000 range. When we started, again, not knowing, you know, if people were going to really get on board with this, we said, okay, if every team would just raise about $5,000. And Dee Dee Carrilla, I know she's very involved with the chamber. She was my right hand, and she said, I think we need to at least tell them 10. And I was like, okay, all right, Dee Dee, we'll do it. And so we did. And, you know, there's that first year, those first several years, not every team made their goal, but then you had some that went way beyond. And so it kind of worked out. But now it's really at a point where people typically don't even sign on to participate in it if they are willing and have the ability to raise at least that amount. And then, of course, we're out working. Our board is out working, too, selling sponsorships and things like that. And so, you know, it's really a group effort. There's a lot of people involved.
Which reminds me, Reagan, I need to get with you after this.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I knew that the ask was coming at some point. So I've got my, free, brother. I've got my checkbook with me. So I'm curious, just on the kind of a fun note, like, what are some more memorable acts that you remember from some of the previous shows?
Well, everybody remembers Joe Edge and the Wrecking Ball.
Right, I was there for that.
Were
one.
You there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. That was monumental, and people have compared, you know, what they were going to do to that time and time again. Unfortunately, we can't fly from the ceiling at the venue we're at now. I don't know that we probably should have done it then, but we did.
It was worth doing
and
it.
And it was worth it. So, you know, Joe Edge and the Wrecking Ball, hands down. But there's been so many, and it's so fun to see people come back year after year who were in it, and they'll kind of mentor the current teams, and that's what's really cool too. We call it all the time our Fit Me family. I have four people on my committee, including Amy, our executive director, and then three others from the community who are just volunteers. And we have a kind of a group text that is year round, you know, and we just call ourselves kind of our Fit Me family. But then the people who are in the show, typically they stay with us in one way or another for many years. And so that's what's really special about it too.
Daniel, have you done it?
The board representation is no longer required for the Fake It to Make It, but
it's very competitive. So yes. we have to watch ourselves. We can't allow the board to do it. So he has an out
for now.
For now.
board chairs in perpetuity are not allowed to participate.
Board chairs in perpetuity.
I'll change the charter. Don't mess with
the
me.
Bylaw this year.
If you were to do it, what would the songs be that you'd pick?
Man, I don't know. It would.
You're going to say I Feel Like a Woman?
No, Shania Twain would probably be pretty good.
You're going to redo Craig Young's Risky Business when he was
yes.
in the underwear.
No, I'm going to let Craig have that one. Yeah. I'm going to let Craig have
that was another
Aladdin
memorable one that I – there's been a few moments over time where I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to have a job next week.
A big part of this like, yeah, a big part of this is that, you know, you know people that sign up to be a team and you want to support them, but partially you want to see them kind of embarrass themselves.
Yeah.
You know, so like the – there's been several years I'm like, I cannot wait to see how this person's going to pull this off. And, you know, they've always done a fantastic job. It's awesome to see them, you know, and I don't know. It's I don't know what I would sing. I probably would have changed my soundtrack from probably a few years ago. So I don't know. That's a, you know, would you be interested in doing it?
No, I'm help. Good. I'm oh, okay. good. All yeah. Right. I embarrassed oh. myself plenty. Okay. I don't need to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Anymore.
I have no shortage of yeah. those opportunities myself. So, and I do want to take a quick second just to thank Jennifer and the team and the committee and all the people that have helped put it together, because it is a show. It is an absolute undertaking. And I don't talk to her or Amy for the, you know, essentially after Christmas, because they go into straight Fake It to Make It, or Fit Me, as we say internally. They go into the mode, you know, and I went and sat down with them one time and they were doing lighting checks and mic checks and, you know, running this. It was crazy. And, you know, it is a major undertaking. So, you know, just so it's said, and again, thank you all so much for all that you do to keep that going and being, you know, a force for this organization for all these years. I mean, it's hard enough to put it on. It's hard to keep it changing and evolving and growing and, you know, being such a major force in the community. So that's awesome. So I, well, even if you were humble, I'm like, I don't know. I'm saying that I've done an awesome
job.
Thank you.
Well, it is a great event. I would encourage everybody to go. My wife and I have been in multiple times. We took my daughter. Was it the year Kate Sanders was in it? Cause I think Brittany Hopkins, who I work with, was on the team. So my daughter and Brittany are friends. And so they went. So it's been great. And it's coming up January the 19th, right? 2024. It's right here, just down the street from where we're recording at the Columbia County Performing Arts Center. It is a great event. Tickets are on sale now, right?
So they are.
They're on
yes.
sale at your website or at the Performing Arts website. So you can go there, get tickets. And I would just buy a bunch of tickets and invite your friends, right?
Sponsorships, they call you, Daniel.
Yes, yeah. And I will get them in touch with the right person. And if you know a team, if you have somebody that's on a team, you can buy tickets from the team because that helps support them and raise their funds. And they've got their own. Listen, there's some competition going on. Like, they take it very seriously. Who sells the most tickets? Who raises the most funds? There's bragging rights or street credibility. You know, I don't know, you know, what happens to the loser, but we don't hear from them anymore. You know, so
people always ask me, well, what do they win? Why is it so competitive? And I'm like, well, it's a, you know, wrestling championship belt. And they're like, that's it? Like, no money? And I'm like, no, not money. It's a fundraiser. And they're like, and they're getting like all worried about
it. Like, yeah. I raised 90,000, I get 10%. Like, yeah. No.
Yes. It's, you know, it's the belt, but it's the belt, you know, and they wear that. We've had them come back to a future show and wear it. And it's really fun.
Will Lanier, who's on the board, finds a reason and a way to, because he won a belt and he wears that belt. I'm pretty sure he never takes it off. I mean, it's uncomfortable at times. He probably tried to wear it in an MRI at one point.
He took a picture with most of our VIPs a couple years ago with the belt on, and the belt was about 3 or 4 years old by that point. And so in the pictures, it looks as if he won that year. He wasn't even in the show. He was just wearing
it. He's wearing it in the grocery store. Whatever.
Are there any changes that you want to talk about?
Yeah, there are. And we're excited about that because we always try to take feedback and, you know, constructive feedback and make changes and really listen. So, you know, one thing that we're going to be doing differently this year is our VIP experience. We've kind of come up with some ways to spread that out a little more, change up some of the benefits for our VIPs. We have the bougie boxes. I don't know if you're familiar with the event, but the bougie boxes, they are bougie and they are mezzanine level, but we've also added some on the orchestra level this year. And so we're excited about that. Those individuals get a gobo with their logo, so a lot of exposure. They also get butler service throughout the meal, special seating. It's bougie. But I think the main thing is the VIP experience and then also the show. So one thing with the show is really being very intentional about what goes into the show and what, the length for each performance and things like that, because, you know, we've just tried to take every bit of feedback that we can and make sure that, you know, we're keeping the energy and the pace up, but, you know, that it's a good experience for everyone.
Jennifer, Daniel, really appreciate you guys coming in today. It's been a wonderful conversation. Heavy, obviously, the main topic of what you guys do is not a light topic, but it's a necessary topic because, as we all know, it does exist, and you can't hide it. If anybody listening to the podcast has any questions, might need some information for themselves, what's the best way to reach you guys?
Our crisis hotline is 24/7, 365 days a year, and the number is 706-736-2499. So if you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence or intimate partner abuse or thinks you might be experiencing abuse, please call the hotline, speak with an advocate. It doesn't mean that you have to come into shelter. It doesn't mean that you have to proceed with any services right now, but it's a step, and it might just be that we help with safety planning. We know that leaving is the most dangerous time for victims, and so a safety plan is absolutely critical, and we can even help with that. So 706-736-2499. You can also visit our website, safehomesdv.org, for more information about our programs and services and just more information in general about the dynamics of abuse.
Well, thanks, you guys, for coming in again, and we'll look forward to fake it to make it here middle of January.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. Looking forward to getting your check, Reagan.
Reagan, another great conversation with our friends Jennifer and Daniel with Safe Homes.
What a powerful conversation. I mean, to hear all the things that they're doing on the assistance side, the fundraising side, and the awareness side in our community is just so heartwarming that we have folks that care so much about those in our community. And I think there's so much that our listeners can both learn about what's happening, but also ways in which we can join alongside Safe Homes and really help those that are struggling
from domestic violence.
Yeah, I mean, what a great resource they are for our community. But again, another opportunity for people to get involved. You know, they talked about ways that people could volunteer, you know, attending the Fake It to Make It. I mean, everything under the sun. I mean, they really do have different ways for people in the community to get involved.
It's so true. Fake It to Make It is a premier event for them. I encourage everybody listening to look it up. I would attend. It's an event that should not be missed. We want to take this opportunity as well to thank all of our listeners for your support. We took a little hiatus, but we're looking forward to staying in the studio, recording more episodes moving forward. We love watching this podcast grow. We want it to continue. So please remember to subscribe to Range of Influence through your favorite podcast app, and be sure to share our show with your friends and rate us on whatever platform you listen from.
Once again, thanks to our guests, Jennifer and Daniel. And if you need more information about safe homes or want access to the 24-hour crisis line, you can view the show notes in our podcast app. And before we sign off, I want to give one more shout out to our presenting sponsor, Premier Networks. Be sure to visit them at AugustaITGuys.com. Again, that's AugustaITGuys.com. We'll catch you next time on Range of Influence.